At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Friday morning, January 12, 2024. It is the Beating the Book podcast. Skill Alexander, not a megapod, not a guessing lines, but something that has become a tradition, unlike any other here. A tennis slam. The Australian Open, tennis's first slam, and I was mentioning on a numbers game this morning, not like golf where like you get to play a few months and then you get a slam. In tennis, it's like, did you just pick up your racket? Let's play a grand slam immediately. It's the Australian Open, tennis's first of four, and to handicap both macro and first round with us in all kinds of directions, it's the great Drew Dinsick, whale underscore capper on Twitter, and the co-host of both the Deep Dive and NBC Sports Bet the Edge podcast. Drew joins us from Long Beach. How you doing, Drew?
I couldn't be doing better. I love this time of year. Love the Australian Open. And some years it's not like, you know, some years it's like, oh, dip our toe in. This could be interesting. This year feels very consequential. We have so many interesting storylines as we break into 2024. The 2023 tennis cycle was as entertaining as any I can ever remember. So hopes are high that we're going to have some pretty spectacular stuff. You know, just off the top of my head, the storylines are, Djokovic was a Wimbledon win away from a, calendar slam last year. People are obviously expecting him to, repeat that success. But Alcaraz is now here officially. He's got, a U.S. Open and a Wimbledon under his belt. People are all kind of expecting this could be the year that there's like a passing of the torch as to, in terms of who's the best player on tour. Can Sinner break through is a fascinating, secondary storyline for the men's side. And then on the women's side, the women's game is in better state than it has been in any year that I've bet women's tennis by far. Iga, you have three bona fide, all-time names that you'll talk about amongst the, best ever women's players. And they're all like really close right now to the peak that they've ever played. And they're all kind of in good health, good form. They have different skill sets that make them excel on different conditions. So it's, it's going to be a pretty incredible calendar for tennis in 2024. And, no better way to start it than, with the slam right out of the gate.
Yeah, talking about Swiatek, Sabalenka, and Rybakina is what Drew is talking about there, the three on the ladies' side. Before we get into it, we'll start with the men since you started with it, we'll start with the men. But I want to send a shout-out to Dan Weston. Dan Weston usually joins us for these podcasts. Dan had open-heart surgery here in the last week, and he is recovering well. But Dan is a guy that we love. I got to hang out with Dan and his wife here when they were last in Las Vegas. Went to dinner with him. So love the dude and just wish him all the best. But as he recovers, Drew and I will try to make him proud here doing an Australian Open preview without him. So our thoughts are with Dan, though. All right, let's start on the men's side, Drew. Well, you mentioned Novak Djokovic. So Novak Djokovic has won 10, count them, 10 Australian Opens. So besides Rafa on clay, this is the greatest Grand Slam player combination there ever has been. Yet, he has a wrist injury. And so, even though he's the short shot here, and if you win 10 of these, I guess you're going to be no matter what, he's got a wrist injury. And a wrist is a wrist, I believe my mom used to say, as I said earlier today. So, this is potentially serious. Obviously, the other players talking about outrights now, Carlitos, no matter what tournament he enters, he's always live. He's plus 350. Yannick Sinner, could this, you just mentioned it, could this finally be the time where he breaks through and wins a slam? I was hoping, you know, a year ago we kind of said the same thing. It took most of the year for him to then kick it into high gear, and now he is definitely in that. And then I feel like, and I'll send it to you after this, but I feel like Daniil Medvedev might be sort of the forgotten guy here who's at 10-1. So let's just start with the wrist injury for Novak and how you process that.
Yeah, boy. We kind of have to, and I love the setup there. It's worth noting that Djokovic, of course, the winner of four of the last five Australian Opens. And the one he didn't win, he was defeated by paperwork, I guess, just the health department in this of the state of Australia didn't come clean about his health status. That's the only way that they can keep him from winning this tournament, apparently.
Didn't he travel? Didn't he travel there and then they sent him back?
They had him they had him literally quarantined in
the airport hotel.
The airport, yeah. They had him in no man's land not clearing customs because of that nonsense. But yeah. I think the 2023 calendar for Djokovic was kind of wild. He was unstoppable in Australia. That was last year's Australian Open win for him was kind of not really a sweat. He dropped one set, and it was to Enzo in a tiebreak. Otherwise, he was superlative there. He defeated Stefanos Tsitsipas in the final, and it was a little close, I guess, at the end. There was some close tiebreaks, but he was untouchable. He obviously defeated Alcaraz at Roland Garros on his way to a title, and then lost Wimbledon to Alcaraz before winning the U.S. Open. The funny thing about his 2023 campaign was up into the U.S. Open title, there wasn't a lot of kind of interstitial tournaments, right? He was just he was relatively kind of focused on just the slams. Like he played, some Rome, he played Cincinnati, but there wasn't a lot of other, there wasn't a lot of other tournaments that he played. And I think that was strategic, right? Like he's kind of at the point now where he is zeroed in on I'm winning slams. That's what I'm here to do. Like forget about the rest of this, titles on tour. They're not gonna kind of add to my legacy. I just need to win slams. And then he comes into the Paris tournament and he clearly was a little gassed from his Wimbledon Cincy US Open run. He had a couple months off there, I guess, but, he definitely wasn't in peak form in Paris, but he went on to win. He took some damage. He went to the tour finals. He took more damage, lost to Sinner, obviously in the round robin before defeating Sinner in the final. But I think I look at kind of the end of his season where he played a lot of tennis in Paris in the tour finals. And I kind of think he got a little bit off, he diverged a little from his slam focus. Right. And it may have cost him a bit because he did pick up a wrist injury, as you mentioned. He was not especially sharp in the Davis Cup finals at the end of November. He was not especially sharp in the United Cup. He had a pretty shocking loss to Alex Demonauer in the third match he played this year.
Resounding loss, as you say.
Yeah, it was a resounding loss. And I look at the wrist injury and I think, okay, well, he's still obviously the favorite for this tournament. And before we saw the draw, I thought, I'll take some no against him at this kind of a price point because I think, there's enough good other players and, the wrist injury could be enough to, kind of limit him. And I think honestly, with a good draw, I would have been pretty unhappy with a no position. But I think the draw actually makes this potentially very challenging for him. Like there are a number of potential matches where he could have to go, dig pretty deep here. And the more tennis he plays in week one, the less likely I think he is to win this tournament. And so, I think, his quarter is not especially weak. I think there's going to be tests at many stages here from, not in the first round, but certainly second, third, fourth and quarterfinal. So just getting out of his quarter, he could take some damage. And I think a wrist injury matters for Djokovic because it's like, you know, his it's not as important, you know, on this surface, I wouldn't say. But certainly if he's unable to, you know, kind of manifest, you know, his classic return style, and just, you know, just be able to, you know, neutralize the big serves with his, you know, his, a lot of it is wrist actually, you know, then he may be a little bit susceptible here. So could end up eating these words. He's still the best, you know, men's tennis player, going right now by margin. But, you know, it's the wrist injury, I think is definitely, you know, kind of a neutralizing factor here. And just in general, like 2024 does have the whiff of passing the torch, I would say.
It does have that whiff. By the way, in case you missed it, if you're not a tennis hardo, as Drew likes to say, like we are, no Rafa Nadal. One would assume that he is prepping for a final run at Roland Garros on clay. So he is not participating in this tournament. Nor would he have been, I would assume, for you. By the way, Nick Kyrgios not either. I wouldn't have assumed that Nadal would have been part of your outright thoughts in this anyway, even if he had played.
No, 100%. Because I mean, and I said this to the Pinnacle guys, and I stick by it. I think Nadal out of the tournament hurts Djokovic because Nadal is the kind of player that would have done some cleanup duty on some of the, you know, on some of the intermediate players.
It's a good point.
Here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, so Nadal would have been very, very long odds to beat Djokovic on this surface. Like borderline impossible for me to see it happening. But Nadal could definitely have knocked out a bunch of the younger players, intermediate players on this tournament, and made it a little bit easier for Djokovic in terms of just who he has to face, I guess.
I think that's a good point.
So,
yeah.
You know, now, you know, Djokovic is going to have to do it himself. And, you know, you have a number of these kind of younger guys. And I'll just, you know, in no particular order, actually in a particular order of when he would have to face them, you know, Popperin in round two looks tough. Echeverry in round three looks tough. Shelton in round four, if he gets there, would be tough. And then Tsitsipas, who plays his best tennis in Australia in the quarterfinals, will be tough. Sinner in the semifinals potentially would be tough. And then Alcaraz in the final would be tough. So, like, you know, really, like, there's kind of a path for Djokovic to get to his, you know, to get to a championship here that takes him through every kind of good young high ceiling player. And you know, a lot of those guys that I mentioned, particularly Shelton, Sinner, and Alcaraz, like, we don't really know where their ceilings are. Like,
that's
they're
right.
Still improving, they're on the come up. Like, you know, we don't know what, and actually in particular with Sinner and Alcaraz, because I want to hear your kind of thoughts on this, but like, neither of these guys has played since the tour finals, really. Like, we don't really know what they've done with their offseason to try to continue to improve their games. There's going to be some surprises. Djokovic is very, very, very underreported how incredibly analytical he is in terms of coming up with the game plan to take apart his opponent on a given surface for the given conditions. And the fact that there's a little bit of an unknown with what Alcaraz and Sinner are bringing to the table, I think, gives them an advantage in this. And I think ultimately, if you're betting against Djokovic in this tournament, you're basically betting on there is a ceiling for those two players in particular that is good enough to beat Djokovic even on a good day. And I think that's fair.
Yeah, just to review what Drew said, qualifier to start, I think it's Prisbic. Popperin, I put Murray down. You put someone else in the third round. Who did you put in the third round besides?
I put Echeverry there.
Echeverry.
Just because, yeah, who knows, though? It could be Murray.
Could be Murray.
Who knows?
Then Shelton or Mannarino I had written down. Shelton, probably. Tsitsipas, Fritz. Remember, Tsitsipas got to the finals. Djokovic dispatched him in straight sets last year. I believe two were tiebreakers. Taylor Fritz not in top form right now. Got another guy who's kind of overplayed, to use your thoughts on maybe Djokovic has overplayed a little bit per his schedule. Fritz has certainly overplayed. Then it is Sinner in the semis, and I know from your appearance on a numbers game earlier this week, you have something to say about Sinner. And then Alcaraz or Medvedev, I've written down in the final. But to your point about like the ceiling of Alcaraz and the ceiling of Sinner and the ceiling of Shelton, it's just so true. And I'm looking at just 3 month data who have been the best recent, like super recent players on tour, just in terms of serve data, return data. And I have that list on the men's side. I have it as Shelton in no particular order. I'll do it in order. Draper in very few matches. Dimonor, Shelton. Like that group of three we're talking about. So 100 is about average. 110 is elite. And then if you get in the 120s, you're like in GOAT, you know, Djokovic, Swiatek area. But these guys are hovering at around 108, 107, 106-ish. Talking about Draper, Dimonor, and Shelton. So, yeah, and Shelton got to the semis here last year? Or am I thinking, he got to the quarters last year before Paul beat him.
Last year.
So this was his breakout. Good. Yeah.
Yeah, he made it to the semis in U.S. Open.
U.S. Open.
Two hard courts. Shelton was incredible at the two hard court slams last year. And he's under a little bit of pressure because he's got to defend some points. So we'll see about Shelton.
Yeah.
You know, he was obvious. He's playing in Auckland, but he just got bounced. Draper, you mentioned, absolutely love it. Love that that kid. He need him to come home for me. And where are they playing?
Adelaide.
Adelaide.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to say that.
Thank you. Adelaide, ultimately, like, yeah, that he's got a huge potential ceiling. But yeah, no, Sinner's the one that I have circled largely just because he right now is at his peak of his powers. You know, he's on the come up. And, you know, I'm very, very excited to see what 2024 has for him in terms of, you know, where his game goes. And honestly, like, there's a little bit of a whiff of, or there was a whiff of, you know, chokishness in slam settings for Sinner at times in his career to this point. But, you know, I like what we saw from him in the tour finals, going head to head with Djokovic, getting the win in the round robin stage was pretty cool. And then backing that up with, you know, getting to the final before ultimately kind of running out of gas. Like, just the fact that he has gotten a couple of big wins, I think, you know, is enough signal for me to believe that he's shaken some of the, you know, kind of mental baggage that comes along with kind of breaking out.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Class is in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
Let me go through this. Well, first, before I go through this player by player, because I want you to do a little word association, not a word association, but like give me a sentence on each of these guys in terms of anybody else out there who's listening who might be thinking of playing any of these guys. But do you get the sense that because we are living in a world of a Djokovic, Alcaraz, Sinner, Medvedev quarters, that it almost paralyzed you from quarters bets? Because that's how I looked at it. I was like, well, Draper is 11-1 in his, but do I really want to play that? Because I definitely think those four guys are appropriately priced. I don't know if it gave you a little paralysis in those markets.
Yeah, no, without question.
Yeah.
I think, and I really, like, it just put me on my heels in terms of, well, do you approach this differently? Right? Like,
right.
Rather than looking for the long shot, are you just trying to synthesize a different way to kind of you know, make something out of the favorites? And I guess of the three, or of the four, Medvedev is the one that you would say would be the most susceptible. Now, granted, he's only losing to the top other three guys, right? Like, Medvedev's not dropping a lot of matches to you know, kind of the run of the mill players on tour.
Yeah.
He's pretty clearly got a pretty high floor. So it's dicey going, you know, aggressively against him. And honestly, there was nobody in his, third quarter that, like, is especially in form outside of Grigor Dimitrov. And I guess maybe he's kind of the one guy that you would circle and ask, is this like the potential for him to finally realize something special? You know, Australian Open, I think, has been his best, you know, has generally has been his best performances that I can remember seeing. I know maybe he made the one great run into US Open.
One great US Open run. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But his semifinals in 2017, that was the best tennis that I've ever seen him play. He ultimately, I think, lost to Nadal in the semifinals that year, but it was a 5-set match.
My most vivid recollection of him at the Australian Open, sorry to interrupt you, Drew, was when he was playing Karatsev. Remember the year that Karatsev got to the semifinals? And like Dimitrov like pissed away a set by just like hitting the ball everywhere. That's my biggest Dimitrov Australian Open memory. But you're right. I mean, I agree with that. First of all, I agree with everything you're saying. That Djokovic, if he's hampered at all, that those other guys on his path, whether it's Shelton, whether it's Sinner, if they're playing at their top, have the potential, right? I think that's a sentence we can all agree on. Have a potential. If they're on their A game and Djokovic is in any way diminished, that could be dicey for Djokovic. And I do think that the Medvedev thing is, you know, this is just to let people know who are not, you know, into tennis. So there's grass is the fastest, clay is the slowest. And there's gradations of hard. And so, you know, I remember when I was in Indian Wells, right? Medvedev complained his whole way through Indian Wells because he was like, this is hard courts. This is like the slowest, grimiest thing. This is his kind of hard court, right? Like, this is fast. This is perfect for him. So I don't have a bet on him. I'm just saying. Let me just do some word association or some name association and get your thoughts. Holger Rune.
Yeah, I think his second half of 2023 was a massive disappointment. He has to kind of prove to me that he's in, you know, is good enough physical form to be able to win 7 best of fives. And he actually has to prove that he can get through some of these matches without, you know, making them longer than they ought to be. I have no Holger Rune in this tournament, although like won't be shocked to see him make a little bit of a run here. His section is soft. Hurkacz is the other kind of top seeded player in there. I don't hold him in especially high regard right now, the way I'm rating him. Umber in that section is not spooky. Griekspoor might not make it to the second round. He's got to face Roman Safelin in the first round. He could be out early. Arthur Fies is of interest because he's kind of a young guy. We don't know where his ceiling is. Fies Rune in round 3 would be freaking amazing. But I think Rune ultimately gets to your quarterfinals here. And if it's against Medvedev, that's probably where it ends. I don't think he has necessarily the right game for these conditions. So this is an opportunity for Rune to kind of learn about how to play the Australian Open more than I think it is realistic that he could be a contender. Where are you on him?
Yeah, I think there was a point last year where I was like, oh, he's going to get to the top before Sinner is. And then no. After that, it just kind of fell off the wayside. He's always live. He's a tough out no matter what, I think. But, yeah, his form late, like I'm looking at his six-month numbers, are just not that good at all.
He's only 20, and he played too much tennis in the first half of the year and just kind of completely physically fell apart in the second half.
It's one thing for the young guys to overplay. What do you make of, like, because you mentioned Djokovic, right? Djokovic seemed to have gotten into this mode of, I'm just trying to win slams. Do you think he like lost sight of that for a second?
If I had to, I'll armchair psychologize a little bit, I guess. Kind of reflecting after winning the US Open, maybe kind of just sat back and was like, okay, this is the final chapter. Maybe I will go to Paris and try. And I don't know how many more of these I'll get. And so there could be a little bit of like he is looking at the end of the road here, or he feels like he is. I don't know. I honestly maybe we're making too much of this. It's possible. But there were a couple of matches in Paris where Paris is kind of the tournament that matters, like kind of the least of all of the big, big prize, big money, big, prestige. And it's usually the one where there's just random ass stuff happens. Like, remember if Krajinovic one year made a super deep run out of nowhere? Did Jack Sock win that one year? Like, it's the one Masters that's like a little bit of a huh? Yeah. What? It kind of just doesn't have the same pedigree as a lot of the other ones do. And, he was in trouble big time. A couple of matches early in that one. I'm looking at against Griekspoor, he was in deep trouble. In a tiebreak down a set against Rune, he was in deep trouble. against Rublev, he was in deep trouble, and he dug, you know, he dug down and fought through those matches before beating Dimitrov in the final. And like, you know, Djokovic with a little bit more focus on, you know, the Aussie 2024 probably just, you know, he pulls the ripcord in the third round, right? Like, he's not fighting through, you know, adversity against Talon Griekspoor. He's like, okay, let's go to Tour Finals and, you know, we'll try there. But yeah, he really went to the mattresses at Paris for some weird reason.
I just want to throw some more names at you, Drew, just because I think there's people out there thinking about some guys, and I kind of know the answers, I think, probably coming up on some, but I just don't want to throw them out nonetheless to be thorough.
Hit me.
Andrei Rublev.
Yeah, just a perfect example of a guy who makes it to the fourth round and then, or the quarterfinals,
or the quarters.
And then calls it like super narrow range of a stage of elimination, round four or quarterfinals, and that's it.
Mr. Quarterfinals, yeah. What about Sasha Zverev?
Oh boy, he got a nice draw. There's nobody in his subsection of section seven, you know, of the fourth quarter that is especially spooky. Rude Zverev in round four looks like a high likelihood, you know, round four match to me. I hold Rude a little higher than the market does right now because I think he did a good job of like the hard reset. He looked like he needed it and got it. And now he's coming in with like this, you know, a proper seating and a proper, you know, expectation, and he might do something cool here. So I think Zverev probably goes out to Rude in the fourth round. And if Zverev gets by Rude in round four, I think he's going to be on fumes, and Alcaraz gets by him in straights. So to me, at least, Zverev has a pretty similar narrow band of stage of elimination, just like Rublev. Like, both of those guys, I will be blown away if they don't make round four, and I will be very surprised if they make it to the semifinals.
You just mentioned Casper Ruud in there. Casper Ruud, who was in two slam finals a couple years ago and none last year. Do I have that timing right? I believe I do. Where do you stand on him now?
His 2023 campaign was a lost year,
yeah.
And it was because he played so much tennis late into 2022 and played through the changeover of the calendar instead of just regrouping. I think having a full hard reset is going to help him be closer to what we saw in 2022 than anything in 2023. That said, his slams where he could realistically make noise are the French Open and the U.S. Open. It's not here.
Tsitsipas, who got to the finals last year and who does have good history on this court.
Yeah. I want to believe.
I know, man. I know.
I want to believe, but at the same time, like, he made a mess of the tour finals with his decision to go and then pull out. He's obviously kind of dealing with some injury concerns that are significant. This is his, you know, his best chance at a slam now is probably here. I at one point thought it might have been the French Open, but now too many players have kind of passed him in terms of clay quality. So it's for whatever reason, he loves playing in Melbourne. He gets huge support from the Greek crowd that loves tennis and loves Tsitsipas. And that tends to help him elevate his quality of play here. His draw is soft-ish, I guess. I think of it as soft because I think, you know, both Cerundolo, Massetti, and Fritz are all three guys that I have a Sharpie line through. And when I, you know, but even before we saw the draw, I'm like, will not bet.
Throwouts.
So yeah, they're complete tosses. So Tsitsipas probably gets to the quarterfinals. The question of him finding enough weaponry to take more than a set off Djokovic is probably where I stop. I don't think he realistically could beat Djokovic, but I think he could do enough damage to make Djokovic's semifinal match against Sinner tougher.
All right, last three names, and then we'll move on to if there's anything in the first round you've bet or that you can't wait to see. Last three names, we've mentioned one of them, which is Alex de Minaur, and the reason I bring him up is not only has his numbers been great here in the short term, they've actually been great 6 months and 12 months also. He is Australian, to whatever extent you feel like a home crowd would help him. How deep do you think he can go?
Oh, boy. So I agree with you. His numbers are very, very, like, sneaky impressive.
Sneaky impressive, yes.
I would make him the sixth choice overall to win this title.
Who's fifth? Who's fifth behind the ones we just mentioned at the top?
Just a hair behind Zverev. Okay. A hair.
Okay.
And actually, he beats Zverev head-to-head, so maybe I should revisit that. But I would put Dimonauer over Rublev, Dimonauer over Rune, over Tsitsipas, over Dimitrov. And then there's really nobody else that really warrants consideration. And I was hopeful that he wouldn't land in center's quarter because I played some center at six. And yeah. I was like, you know, it'd be a real bummer if Dimonauer ended up in center's quarter because he does have a ceiling that he can beat center. And I think actually he did last fall. I want to say was it Vienna? I don't exactly remember Sinner lost to him. It was in Paris. Dimonauer took him out. Oh no, that was a walkover. Excuse me. So yeah, maybe I was confusing. Oh yeah. He lost to, Sinner lost to Shelton in Shanghai. That's right. And then, Dimonauer got by him via walkover.
Do you believe walkovers, by the way, Drew, Matt Brown, Kelly Billen, and I, when we used to do primetime action, I used to complain all the time about walkovers and getting bets refunded because, you know, I'd be leading and the person I was backing would be leading and the opponent would walk off the court. And we decided that when you quit in the middle of a match, you should physically have to lay down and the opponent has to walk over you just for the shame of what you're doing. Do you believe in that at all? I think that is such a great idea, especially
I like showmanship. Yeah.
Yeah. On clay where your clothes are dirty. I think it's the best on clay. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt your Dimonauer thing. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I guess so. Sinner is 6-0 actually in matches against Dimonauer head to head. So, you know, maybe I shouldn't be that spooked, but yeah, Dimonauer definitely has a high enough ceiling to where fourth round is a bare minimum expectation here. His little subsection is super soft. He can beat Rublev. Dimonauer versus Sinner is my expectation for the second quarter final. And I'm tipping it to Sinner. But if Dimonauer shocks and takes Sinner out at that stage, I don't think any of us should be surprised considering what his numbers look like right now.
I agree. All right, last two. We mentioned a lot of these guys. Tommy Paul. Where do you stand on him now?
Yeah, he looks interesting because of where he landed, just because he has some sort of, he's a little bit of Alcaraz's kryptonite for weird reasons. I don't understand it personally. He got, what's the right word? Embarrassed by Jack Draper in Adelaide. And Jack Draper is lined up to play him in round two here. Yeah. So he may have he is a guy that I think an early exit would be less surprising. You know, he's done the best of the Americans besides Shelton at slam level for whatever it's worth. So he has some sort of intestinal fortitude that's worth paying attention to.
And usually if you get beat, you can come back a lot on these pro circuits and beat your opponent. But if you get crushed like that, it's a different story. And then last, anything on Khachanov or Korda? Any thoughts on either of those two guys?
Well, Korda is a huge injury risk, so yeah. He's not a guy I can get involved with in the futures market at all. And Khachanov is pretty out of form and really, I don't think has played his best tennis is 6-ish months behind us.
Yeah.
So, I would be surprised if he finds a gear here. He looks like a guy that probably tunes up for the clay swing starting and then maybe makes noise in the fall, but
I only bring him up because
low expectations for him this winter.
Yeah. Spring. He got to the semis here last year. Only reason I bring him up, but yes, not his top form.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
We should probably point out before we get to the first round matches. And by the way, I like the women's side, which we're about to get to. I don't remember seeing this many awesome first-round matchups. Not quite as awesome on the men's side, but we'll get your initial thoughts. Just one other thing I want to point out. These are best-of-fives on the men's side. So if you're new to betting tennis, or if you're new-ish, just a reminder that on the men's side in slams, it's best-of-five. It's not your standard best-of-three. And so when you do best-of-fives, there's going to be, you know, by contrast, you might have more upsets on the ladies' side just from a sample size standpoint, right? But when you play best of fives, and especially on a court like this, you tell me if I'm wrong, Drew, the chances of tiebreakers become that much more possible. Multiple tiebreakers in matches, fast courts, best of fives. Djokovic is the king of tiebreakers. But there's always something in the back of my mind, right, where I'm like, is that sustainable forever, right? He's and then, you know, because normally, unless you're John Isner, one thinks that tiebreakers are sort of not random, but you're going to win as much as you're going to lose sometimes. So I'm just curious if you think, besides Djokovic, is there someone out there that you think is particularly advantageous on the men's side if they get to tiebreakers? do you believe the premise? By the way, do you agree with the premise of what I said?
Yeah, tiebreakers are coin flips.
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, it's just the nature of how, you know, it kind of comes down to high leverage points as opposed to being able to put together sustained winning on return or on serve, right? Like, in order to get a break, like, you need to put together some sustained high quality to break serve on this surface especially, right? Yeah. But in a tiebreak, you just need one lucky return, right? You need your opponent to... you know, and like, what actually levels things, in my opinion, is particularly on this court, I feel like, because when we say stuff like, oh yeah, a fast hard court like this favors, you know, players with a good serve, well, it's not like a good serve, in my opinion, in terms of speed here, right? Like yeah, if you can serve fast, like, yeah, cool. But it's, to me, at this court, it's much more about placement and variety and being able to kind of disguise where you're going, right?
Because the surface is going to mitigate speed differential, basically.
Sure, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And like, if you can force your opponent to be unprepared for where the serve is coming, like, where is it going to land? Out wide, down the tee? Like if you can place it in the, like, corners, if you can paint the corners here with your serve and kind of misdirection with your body and your toss and where it's going to go, that's a huge, huge advantage. And it's not as much just looking at that you can tease out of the data, looking at fast, hard courts with high ace percentage, surely, players who are good at that. You know, that's something that kind of comes with age and experience. And, you know, that was what made, you know, players like Federer so phenomenal on this particular court. And, you know, Djokovic being able to read and react and get serves back that have no business coming back is what makes him so good on this court. So, but yeah, no, tie breaks are phenomenally high variance. And if you are going for, you know, if you're pressing, if you're going for the corners and you're missing and you're giving your opponent looks at second serve, like, those are, that's what decides a lot of this stuff. And, you know, I think, you know, you can specifically look at players who have put together solid runs of form here. Ben Shelton last year is a great example, young player with a very, very phenomenal serve, and who does have the ability to kind of give you variety and disguise it, and hasn't played as much, you know, tour level tennis to where he's predictable. He's a guy that I would expect to be able to pull out tie breaks at a higher clip. You know, I think he's the only guy off the top of my head that really comes to mind. But
I think that's a great answer, because without actually searching his data on it, he feels like, in my mind's eye, he's always winning tiebreakers. Like, every match I ever see him winning, he's like going nuts during a tiebreaker, basically.
I think flat out off the top of my head, he's the guy that really stands out. Let me see here. The Alcaraz is obviously way up there. Artrofies, another young player from France. He's a guy that stands out from my numbers in terms of tiebreak win percentage.
Draper? Draper at all? I'm curious if Draper's up there.
Let me take a look. He is not near the top neutrally, but if we zero in on on hardcore, I suppose he would be. So yeah, I mean,
All right. I was just curious because that's something people need to keep in mind. I think Shelton's a good answer to that. Last thing on the men's side before we go to the women's. First round matches, lines are up now. We're starting to get the schedule sort of as we do this Friday morning. We're starting to get a better sense of who's playing when. This tournament starts. Now, for those who are listening in the U.S., you're probably going to be watching football when this starts. So super wildcard weekend. This will probably this during the Peacock game between the Chiefs and the Dolphins is when the Australian Open actually starts. So whether that's what 7 p.m. ish Eastern or 4 p.m. Pacific, somewhere in that pocket. Don't hold me to the exact time on that, but that's right around there where this tournament starts. Is there a men's first round match that you have bet, Drew, to this point? Or is there one that you're looking at where you're like, oh, I could see myself having a position on that.
I think the most intriguing and exciting match we already kind of mentioned, it's Roman Safulin versus Griekspoor. Really, really high quality, first round match there in terms of two players who I think have, decent ceilings and are in decent form right now. That one looks like the easiest bet to the over for me. I was hoping we were going to get a bettable price on the money line for Safulin. It opened in like the minus 200 range, I want to say.
Minus 192.
Yeah. It opened way, way up there. And it's basically like it was a good number. Like it hasn't really moved much. But Griekspoor is not a player that I think is a walkover, lay down here at all. Over 40 games is a fair play there because I think that one's going to go five sets potentially.
How about Dimonoros playing Raonic? Didn't Raonic retire? Like, what happened there? Did I miss on that?
Yeah, this is probably his last. Okay, probably his last hurrah. I think he's using up all of the. This is going to sound disrespectful, I guess. I think he's using up all of his protected ranking stuff to get into these slams for the payday, probably. Yeah. One last time.
Probably
that
so.
wouldn't be shocking. There's another interesting match a dog I like on this one is Yannick Hanfman. I like his game for the fast hardcourt. He's taken on Gael Monfils, who we haven't really seen any evidence that he's going to be able to find super impressive level here. And Yannick Hanfman as a dog against Monfils gives you one of my favorite bets of all, which is you get to take the games. And if you're betting against Monfils with the games, then you are opening up the opportunity of Monfils doing well early and then preserving himself in the third or fourth set, right?
No, and so, he doesn't do that. What are you talking about?
There's a couple players like that where he's very, very tough to beat. You don't necessarily want to go against him on the money line.
Yeah.
But taking plus 3.5 games, for instance, with a player like Yannick Hanfman, basically, in order for Monfils to win, to cover 3.5 games, I think he has to win in straights. And I don't think he's in that kind of a fitness level right now where I fear that at all. So if I could only have one bet on any match in round one of the men's side, I'd take 3.5 games with Yannick Hanfman.
Yeah, who I've won on as a dog outright in the past in several different tournaments over time. But yeah, that makes sense against Monfils. There are actually some great, I mentioned Raonic, who used to be a phenomenal server, and I don't know that he can beat Dimonor, but just talk about names. Wawrinka is playing Mannarino in the first round. Stan Wawrinka, who has won multiple slams,
very cool.
Mannarino's minus 256 in that. And then where was the other one? I just caught my eye, where I'm like, oh wow, that's interesting. Well, Lloyd Harris is a big favorite over Quentin Halas. Quentin Halas is a big server, isn't he? Did I have that wrong?
Yeah.
Yeah,
so Quentin Halas is a beautiful serve.
That's interesting to me. And then there was another one that led. How? By the way, how far has Van de Zandschulp sunk?
That might have been a flash in the pan.
Yeah, might have been a flash in the pan. And then the last one, where was I? I want to find it. Just caught my eye. There's a lot. Bonzi Musetti is interesting. Tsitsipas is playing Berrettini. That 2 years ago would have been a semifinal, right? Now Tsitsipas is a massive favorite there. Oh, Tiafoe and Borna Koric. Anything with Borna Koric? Anything there? No, nothing.
No. I don't think so. Okay. But Tiafoe, by the way, is a player that I'm not backing him off of US soil.
Either.
No, thank you. Yeah. Just in general of the middle class, like I had a bunch of these. We kind of already mentioned it. I had a bunch of these guys circled as hot fades And I didn't get the matchups where I'm really interested in the dogs in round one. But in no particular order, Hubie Hurkacz, I think, is a potential for an early exit here. He's your 9 seed. Taylor Fritz, your 12 seed, we mentioned. Hatchinoff, your 15 seed. Tiafo, your 17 seed. Nico Jerry, your 18 seed. Do we owe it to the listeners to give Scam Nori a shout here? Scam Nori is he is an Iron Man. Yes. Best of 5 tennis. He overperforms. Do not look past Scam Nori beating your favorite player, because he'll do it. I think Umber is not a player I'm interested in this tournament. 22 seed Francisco Cerúndolo might be playing the worst tennis of any of the seeded players right now. He is an absolute hot mess. Jan Leonard Struff got into the rankings with some pretty unimpressive play last year, in my opinion, and I think he's going to plummet out and could be an early exit. Then you have some guys who particularly, excel on clay, like Sebastian Baez, who, kind of out of his element, maybe just here for a paycheck. So that's kind of a roundup of sort of the middle class and guys who could crash out early, because, from memory, the Australian Open, there are players who are not really ready to start their season, period. They're not ready.
Not ready.
And they're here for a little bit of sponsorship money, a round one, round two paycheck. Let's go carry on with our holiday.
It's crazy how quick to the beginning of the tennis season the Slam is, right? Like, that's how we started this show. So a couple things there. One, it's an official podcast because Drew said Scam Nori. And two, just from an American betting standpoint, like, I know you're into Wild Card Weekend as heavily as anybody, as I am.
Yeah.
Football's our first love. This tournament starting, so all the first round matches where it's just like a crap load of tennis matches, right as Saturday and Sunday footballs go, actually in between overnight, right? Like, how are you just functioning? Like, what's your balance? Like, what do you tell the wife? What do you say?
My eyes already started twitching because I'm not getting enough sleep and I'm feeling the pressure of all this going on at the same time. But my secret for Australian Open and anyone that wants to, that lives in the United States, feel free to borrow this. The radio broadcast for the Australian Open is outstanding. They have some of the best tennis announcers in the world calling those matches. And it's better for you, in my opinion, at least, to be listening than to be kind of up in the middle of the night looking at a screen and, having the light kind of effing with your brainwaves. At some point, like 2 a.m, if I'm still up and I'm still interested, if I have a match that I really care about, I'll just put the headphones in and listen.
What network are you listening to?
It goes out via the Australian Open app.
It's
free app. Australian Open has a free app, and they are paying like Gigi Salmon and Robbie Koenig, like really, really high quality play by play people doing the radio for that. It's awesome. Yeah.
Okay. Ready to talk some women's tennis?
Women's side? For sure.
All right.
We
buried the lead. So you just talked about preparation. All right. So quick review. Iga Swiatek was number one in the world 75 weeks in a row. And you could tell it was wearing on her last year. And she had a swoon in 2023. A swoon for her, by the way, it should be pointed out, because she still won more tournaments than anybody. She still got herself a slam. But some expectations were not met. Once that monkey was off her back, and I say this all the time with Beijing, it seemed like when she won Beijing, it was kind of her message to everybody, I hope you enjoyed it while you could. She's won 4 slams, 3 of them at Roland Garros. She's won 1 U.S. Open. She's trying for her 5th slam here. And when I say, the slam begins right at the beginning and you can find out who's prepared and who's not, part of it is not just me sort of tongue-in-cheek saying, I hope you guys enjoyed it while you can. J-Rod, who I know you're in communication with on Twitter, does such a great job for me of keeping me abreast of every little tweak Iga has in her game. And so she has really worked on some stuff. She is ready to go. But here's the issue, and this is why we don't do the, we try to do these slam podcasts post-draw as opposed to pre. You got a big 3 in women's tennis in Rybakina, Sabalenka, and Swiatek, who Drew just talked about eloquently at the top. Apologies to the Coco Gauff people out there for not including her in that group. But those are the big, that's the big three. And so when you ever have a three in anything, whether it's men's or women's, you're going to get a random draw where one of those three is going to be on one half and two are going to be on the other half. And however that unfolds really ought to trigger bets. Now, some of us are idiots like myself who just go crazy pre-draw anyway. Okay, I'm in the tank for Iga. Iga did not get the best of this. She ended up on the same side as Rybakina. Sabalenka was the one who got the best of it. She's on the half by herself, quote-unquote, of those three. She does have Coco Gauff on her side. But she, of the big three, got the half to herself. And so, Drew, I throw it to you. What did that do to your betting immediately when the draw came out?
So the major takeaway was the Rybakina landing on the top. You said it. People were kind of pretty quick, and I was too, looking at sort of the rest of the players in Q1 with Iga, and kind of, you know, a little bit of a, you know, WTF. What did she do to deserve this?
Yes.
Sophia Kenin won the title here. Why are we playing her in round one?
We'll get into that. Her whole path.
Angie Kerber won a title here. Why are we playing her in round two?
That's right.
I guess
we should just go there. Keep going.
Elena Svitolina, she beat her at Wimbledon last year. Why are we playing her potentially in round four? Yelena Ostapenko is kind of, she's the kryptonite for Iga. Why are we playing her in the quarterfinal? And then all that before Rybakina. I will say that, like,
it's brutal.
It's not a good draw at all. That said, I don't think any of these women realistically have a meaningful opportunity to defeat her.
Yeah.
It's just going to be that she's going to need to play locked in tennis, no mistakes, no margin for having an off day at any point in her seven match, you know, stretch. She's got to be sharp against Kenin. She's got to be sharp against Kerber, probably playing Linda Noskova in the third round. She's very, you know, very, very solid up and coming young player.
Yeah. I put Buskova down, but yeah, you're probably right. Could be Noskova.
Yeah. But both players can reach a very high level on any given day. Kudermetova obviously has slam choke issues, but she could be a tough out. Svitolina certainly has proven she could be a tough out in round four. And Yelena Ostapenko is playing some of the best tennis we've seen from her in a long time. I would expect to see her as your quarterfinal opponent for Iga. So Ostapenko beat her at the US Open, I believe. So it's, you know, there is a lot of women with pedigree and with kind of head-to-head success against Iga that she's going to have to play in this tournament. So she's going to have to find another level mentally, I think, to get it done. But the key, and you brought it up already, and I think everybody needs to kind of acknowledge this. Rybakina is the sleeping giant. In this field besides Iga. It's not Sabalenka, who I know is the defending champion. There are people who have probably talked themselves into Sabalenka bets just seeing that Iga and Rybakina are on the top and Sabalenka has the bottom to herself. I think ultimately the number one ranked player in this field right now is Iga, and number one hardcore ranking for me is Iga. She is close to the peak of her powers in both rankings by my numbers right now. She is still like kind of on the come up, I think, in terms of where her, you know, her ceiling is. You mentioned the wrinkles she's added to her game. I think that will matter. But Rybakina is, she's ice cold. We jokingly call her a robot.
Unflappable. Yeah. Unflappable.
Unflappable. And the only thing that was able to slow her down in 2023 was illness. She, you know, came down with two bouts of COVID, apparently, one at the French Open and one at the US Open, I believe.
That's right.
It was pretty clear watching her play. She was physically unwell. And if you watched any of her performance in Brisbane, she's well. She's quite well.
Were you on Rybakina with me at +140 against Sabalenka?
Yeah, didn't understand that price.
Yep.
Didn't bet it as big as I should have.
Yeah, nor did I, but I bet it. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, didn't end up watching much of that match because there wasn't much of that match to watch.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly sure why she didn't just withdraw from Adelaide, why she went there and played a couple rounds.
I was surprised by that too.
Out.
Yeah.
But you know, she's trying to get back in form. I think she recognizes that 2023 was a little bit of a lost year. And she's definitely a sleeping giant to the tune of her skill set is kind of perfectly paired with these conditions. And she does have a bit of a giant slayer when it comes to kind of head to head success against Iga that I think should kind of keep people, who have maybe bet a little bit too much Iga to win the title.
I'm raising my hand for those who
I'm gonna be a little nervous, and like I have no Rybakina. I think she should be your second choice for this one. And if she goes out early in this tournament because something crazy happens, there's gonna be a long, loud sigh of relief from I think a lot of the Iga backing community here.
I am so deep with Iga and the combination of the Ravens and Niners. I am deep, so I'm raising my hand. Gracious. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
So I guess here's a little bit of hope then. Rybakina's draw is no good. Yeah. It's not good. This is a tough draw too. She's got to play Pliskova in round one. Pliskova's, she's got to serve. She's the Isner of the women's side, I suppose. Maybe a little bit better in terms of what's like sustained success. Although I think they probably had pretty comparable careers in terms of slam success. But
I would agree with you. Better overall than Isner. Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah. And I think, Pliskova can beat you if her serve is on form in a given day. I think the rest of that section for Rybakina is not especially spooky. I mean, Kalinina, definitely has a high ceiling. Kasatkina is not going to take much more than a game or two off Rybakina, I don't think. But then the bottom half has a couple of players who definitely could defeat Rybakina in a quarterfinal. And I think it starts with Zheng Xinwen. I still rate her very, very high. I saw her at the U.S. Open, watched a match she played in.
Yeah.
She is deceptively impressive physically.
Oh, she's
like she's huge.
Yeah.
And Rybakina is too. Like Rybakina is also like surprisingly like very, very tall and strong. Both players like, they both feel like almost what's the right word, like manufactured in a lab to be good women's tennis players. they're built for this.
Yes,
like they're built for it.
Yes.
And so Zhang Rybakina would be my second quarterfinal, and I'll be honest, I'm probably gonna bet Zhang at price in that match if it's like plus 200 ish
and yet what's interesting is Iga seems to own her a little bit.
Yeah, surely. Yeah.
I mean,
because Zheng Xinwen is extremely talented, extremely high level, but inexperienced, right? Definitely doesn't have the reps of how to solve problems on the tennis court, as far as I could tell you. And so I would look at, Iga is a problem solver, absolutely, right? So there's definitely opportunity for Rybakina to get popped before a semifinal head-to-head with Iga. I don't know. What would you expect if this goes chalk, if we have Iga Rybakina semifinal, what kind of price would you expect market to give us?
It's a great question. Knowing what the market has done in the past, they still give Iga so much respect. I think we'll see a price that I will feel will be unjustly high. So I think we'll get Iga just south of $2. And my reaction will be, uh-oh, that's too high.
Okay. So you think fair should be more like minus 180 plus 180, minus 160 plus 160-ish?
No, I think it should be even lower. I think it should be about minus 160, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that's me knowing that Rybakina, Rybakina, just to make it clear what you were saying, Svitolina, her potential. So it's for Iga, it's Kenin, who won the 2020 pre-pandemic Australian Open, Kenin. Then it's either Kerber, who's looking in great form. She's won multiple slams, or Danielle freaking Collins in round two. We have a big Sigma Derby performance going on over here.
Oh, wow.
Sorry about that. Wow. Big excitement at Sigma Derby adjacent to me. either Buzkova or Noskova third round. Then Svitolina. Svitolina beat Iga in the quarterfinals of Wimbledon last year. Then it's Ostapenko. She beat Iga in the round of 16 at the U.S. Open. Then it is Rybakina or Jesse Pegula. If it's Rybakina, round of 16 Australian Open, she beat Iga last year. And she beat Iga in the semifinals of Indian Wells, let us not forget. So because of that history, I do mute the Iga number against her in a way that I do not against anybody else.
Okay.
You?
Yeah. I think that's completely fair. My guess is what Iga and her team have put in terms of work in the off season has been to try to counter the strength of Rybakina specifically. Would be my guess.
I think you're right.
The Indian Wells loss was the one result on Iga's entire 2023 resume that I think you stay up at night thinking about if you're like really have high conviction that she's the best player.
I did. I stayed up. I lost sleep. Yeah. I did.
That was a bad one.
I was so fanboying at that tournament. It's ridiculous. But I think it's to your point though. Like she's the one that is sort of out there as the monster lurking. And also, by the way, your point about the robotic nature of, not a robotic, but like born to be tennis players, Rybakina and Zhang Xinwen. First of all, you were pausing. I didn't know which way you were going to go with that because I thought you were going to be like, Zhang Xinwen is the most gorgeous player I've ever, I didn't know what you were going to say.
Oh, she is gorgeous.
But she is gorgeous. No, you would think, right, that Zhang Xinwen, remember when Zhang Xinwen played Iga, was it at the French Open? It was on clay. I think it was at Roland Garros, and she won a set off of her.
She won the first set tiebreak.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was like the only set that Iga lost on clay, I feel like, that entire cycle.
I think it was. And at that point, you were like, oh, this is the girl to beat right here.
Yeah, she's got it. Yeah.
But since then, Iga's kind of owned her. It's Rybakina that's the one. Like, and to your point, Sabalenka doesn't scare me in the same way. She really doesn't, if you're an Iga person.
Yeah, because, I mean, I'm not expecting, you have to beat Iga. Iga's not going to beat herself.
Yeah.
You absolutely have to beat Rybakina. Unless she's obviously physically unwell. Sabalenka is her floor on a given day in my distribution of expectation significantly lower than the other players.
Yes.
Because she can play her way out of a match just mentally. And double faulting. Like there are two ways she has proven to play her way out of the match, out of a match. And also she's got still, even though I know she overcame it a couple of times last year, US Open and Australian Open, she overcame it, but she has a semifinal boogeyman still, which is weird.
Remember the French Open semi against Mukova? Who's, by the way, not in this tournament on the ladies' side. Mukova is not playing. Bencic, Andreescu, Kvitova, Keys, none of them are playing. But, she had that match done. She had won that match, and then Mukova ended up losing, coming back miraculously and winning that. Just mental strength at that point, and then lost to Swiatek in a pretty good competitive final at Roland Garros. All right, so.
And, you don't need to believe us. She choked the Roland Garros semifinal against Mukova. She choked the semifinal in Wimbledon against Ons, although we could maybe give Ons a little bit of credit. She played phenomenally well in the third set there. And she was determined to choke out of the gate against Madison Keys at the US Open. 0-6 in that first set.
That's
right. She looked like she wanted to be anywhere else than on the tennis court. It was crazy. I have no idea how she came, got back into that and ultimately won 7-6, 7-6 in the following two sets. But she's got a boogeyman in the semifinal round.
So on the men's side, just to clarify, you have a bet on Sinner to win it all and you bet on Djokovic.
Yeah, that's all I've got outright.
Okay. Yep. On the women's side, then what did you bet?
I also think on the men's side, if you want to get weird and, Djokovic, Sinner, Alcaraz, quarter parlay, not crazy.
Yeah.
Which I would leave Medvedev.
You would leave Medvedev out. Okay, that's fair. Yeah. And then we'll get into this player by player thing here on the women's side, but just what are your bets on the women's side then? So all that said, you still like me bet on Iga though?
Yeah, and I missed best of price to get off of that because I bet Iga when she was just freaking like lighting the world on fire in the United Cup.
Oh yeah.
I was like, oh yeah, no way. Anyway, no one's gonna be able to touch her. And then at the same time, Rybakina was proving that she was very clearly in form. So yeah, I mean, nothing. I don't think Rybakina is a fair play at price for the Q2 because Zhang is good enough. And we didn't even mention Jess Pegula. She's in Q2 as well.
Her numbers, her numbers are still great, man. Still great.
They're still great. Yeah. She's just a rock solid good player. This is her, probably her best surface, her best chance. People would maybe say US Open just because it's home soil, but these conditions are a little bit better for her, I think.
Kelly was so funny on earlier this week on a numbers game. We were talking, and Kelly's not as big of a tennis better as we are, but he when I brought up Pegula, he said, is she going to be okay financially if she loses in this tournament? He did mention the heiress to the Pegula billions, rather, Terry Pegula, her father, the owner of the Bills and the Sabres.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
I bet you're smart.
Yeah, and you like to hold your own in the group chat.
We can help you drop even more knowledge. My name is Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Izadi. We host a daily news podcast called Post Reports.
Every weekday afternoon, Post Reports takes you inside an important and interesting story with the kind of reporting that you can only get from The Washington Post.
You can listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. Go find it now and hit follow.
All right, so I'm sorry, I interrupted. Your bets then are?
Yeah, no, all I've got out right now is Iga.
Iga, okay.
But I think if you're going to get weird long shotty in the women's side, you got to look bottom half. And I think the draw kind of is pretty open in Q3 just because Coco Gauff, for whatever it's worth, like her market price is just a bit too high, I think. And, you know, she benefited pretty obviously from home court at the US Open and went on just like the run of her life through the entire US hard court swing.
Her whole career, Dan Weston does it. Dano did a great job on Coco even from her beginnings. She's always been chronically overpriced, even after her first bout of success, right? Before she won a slam even.
I mean, because like people want to bet on the next great young American player. Like you'd be like, oh, this is the next Serena. I'm gonna play her until she wins. Well, that she won. Okay.
She had a great summer. Cincinnati and then the U.S.
Great
Open.
Summer.
She had a great summer.
Great summer. And she's a great story. Like that was an emotional U.S. Open final for sure. Like I loved seeing it. Loved running up in the stand and hugging her dad and all that it was awesome.
Dude, I don't know if we've ever talked about this. I said this on the radio side. I don't know it's because I helped raise a girl, right, from the age of six to she's now 17. But I don't really get like openly emotional and stuff. I did cry during the Bee Gees documentary, I should point out. So maybe I do as I get older. but when Coco started just Charlie Brown tears when she won, I started crying. Like, I couldn't, but I'm not a Coco guy, right? Like, I'm an Iga guy. But, like, I, like, lost it, dude. I couldn't believe it. I was, like, wiping tears away. I don't know what that was. But I think I related it to my Gracie, and I was just like, wow. Like, I've been there before. I know what that, not that she won a slam or anything, but I just know what it is for a girl to have those emotions. It was just amazing.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. I haven't fully gotten here yet, and I have two kind of key questions for you on the bottom half because I won't tip my hand here, but I honestly think the third quarter winner comes out of a round one match, and you can probably guess which one.
And then
your fourth quarter winner, I gotta think that this is probably the last time you can swing on price on Andreeva. I have. Again, solid line through on, solid line through Krejcikova. Alexandrova played too deep into this week to be a contender, in my opinion. Samsonova might as well just go home. Vekic, Cerenko, like none of these players realistically can go toe-to-toe with Sabalenka.
I will never forget.
Yeah.
We've talked about this before on this podcast, but I will never forget being on a flight, having Samsonova, and literally like watching the score and her just barfing eight set points, was it, or match? I can't remember what it was. Yeah. And I'm just like, never again, never again. That
Tom
was
Ljanovic got her.
That's right. Before, was that the same tournament Tom Ljanovic beat Serena? Was that the same
tournament? It was the next round.
Serena,
right? Right. I don't think there's a player on the women's side in the last 2 years who I've lost more on and against than Samsonova. I can't figure her out to save my life.
I can't either. She's my...
So congratulations to winning the fourth quarter, I guess, because I do not believe in her at all right now. Blown away. I will be blown away if she makes a run here.
All right, so your two questions. The first one was, what match will Q3 come down to? I'm guessing it's Andreeva versus Coco. Is that the match?
Oh no! I think there's a round one match in Q3 that will decide that quarter.
Hold on! Don't tell me! Tell me!
Okay.
Let me make sure I'm looking at the third quarter. This is always tough on the WTA site. Let's see. First round match in the third quarter. Yeah. Oh, you're talking about Haddad Maia and Fruvertova, or Linette come on! Not Garcia and Osaka, right? No.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. I think that's your, at least in terms of ceiling, that's the second and third best players in Q3 after Goff. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting because Garcia is definitely not in top form. And Osaka's Osaka.
She set off of Iga at the United Cup. I don't know, man.
She did. She did. And Osaka, we have no idea what we're getting, do we? No idea. Yeah.
No.
Osaka.
But definitely, like a good enough player, I think, on hard court that we shouldn't be shocked if she does some crazy. And I guess maybe the broader commentary here is that Q3 is very weak.
Very weak.
Really, really.
That's
weak.
Right.
And so, so is Q4. Like, I think the bottom half of the draw, if I had any kind of more higher confidence in Sabalenka, not bottling it at some point, I would say that this is don't be stupid. She's making the final and she might not lose a set. But I think you can definitely convince me that the winner of Garcia Osaka ends up, going the distance there. That looks like the kind of match that could battle harden Osaka to get her in shape,
form. And Garcia only knows one way to play, which is like full force at you. So
That's right. All out, full on, all out. Garcia, I thought, played Ostapenko very well in round of 16 at Adelaide. Again, she did take a set off of Iga in the United Cup. Ultimately, lost 6-1, 6-1 afterwards. But she beat Paolini this year. Yeah. There's some signs that she's closer to what we expected at the beginning of, I think she might have suffered too in 2023 from playing too much in 2022, but who knows. The Osaka side of it is, she showed flashes in her first couple matches before losing to Pliskova. To me, the fact that you get a day in between every match
is huge.
Huge for her.
That's right? True.
So the fitness side of things are a little bit less concerning. Just in general, the fact that she got such a soft quarter is interesting. She's obviously has the mental side of things in general, although, playing well, like she's like volatile mentally both ways, right? Playing well, like it builds, playing poorly, like it, kind of comes unraveled.
But, I used to call her Steely before she got into all the other stuff. I used to call her that all the time. I'm glad you mentioned her, and I would have also, but like we talk about Iga. Iga's won 4 slams. None of these other girls have won. None of the modern, the young players of Iga's age have won more than one. Coco's 1-1, Sabalenka's 1-1, Rybakina's 1-1.
Right.
But Naomi Osaka won 4. She won 4. Two at the Australian Open, 2 at the U.S. Open, so all on hard courts. And this was like in the 2018 to 2020 range. I guess the last Australian Open was at the beginning of 2021. Then she went and she had mental health struggles. Then she went and she had a baby or babies, plural, I'm not sure. No longer with her boyfriend, by the way. They broke up, her baby daddy. So she is all about the tennis again. And so, I mean, it is incumbent upon us, you're right, to mention that she, at her best, and she's only 26, right? So it's not like this is somebody coming back when they're 35 years old. Like, she could regain this. She could.
Oh, surely. Surely.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be
probably
awesome?
We've been doing these a while. Yeah. I bet you we talked about it after her 2021 or into the 2021. Because she won back-to-back. She's done it twice now. She won back-to-back hard court slams.
Yeah, U.S. Open. 18, 19, 20. That's right.
2021 U.S. Aussie.
Right.
And I remember after the 2021, or maybe it was after the 2020 U.S. Open, I was like, well, if you got a good price on Osaka, like, congratulations. That's the last time that's ever going to happen for a hard court slam for the rest of our lives.
That's right.
And it ended up only being one more time.
Yeah.
She was the favorite and took it home because it all kind of came unraveled after that. But yeah, I mean, I would expect that, you know, she clearly has she's got the resources. She's one of the most, you know, she's one of the wealthiest athletes on earth.
Oh, my God.
She's the second highest earner and of all women athletes last year, despite playing zero matches. Like, you know, she's got all of the support you could ever ask for, you know, financially, and that should help her kind of recapture the physical, you know, peak of her powers type of form. She's 26, so she's still well within her window where she would be expected to be at or near her peak or be able to recapture that form. Like, she has the weapons to succeed on hard court. She definitely, I don't think, should be overlooked. It may be too early. You know, the Aussie Open offers weird stuff sometimes. Like, Serena won this one year while pregnant because the other women in the tour were just kind of not really ready yet for the season to start. Like, you know, that there is definitely, it would be insane, I think, for her to win this title. But considering the fact that a win over Garcia would then open up a head to head against the winner of Seville Fretch, and then the Potapova, Juvan, Putintseva, like the second and third rounds could be very, very soft. And then if you have Goff Osaka, and Osaka has three wins under her belt, and she's got a full day to, you know, kind of rest and prepare for that match, she could definitely beat Goff. And at that point, the top half of Q3 is way, way soft. So
it's funny.
I don't think it's crazy at all that Osaka could get to the semifinals here, win Q3, and at that point, Sabalenka have the ghosts. And does Osaka make a final here, where she hopefully gets obliterated by Iga? We'll see.
You're getting me pumped. tennis is better with Naomi Osaka. Good. By the way, I was curious because you said, like, you know, I just went down the rabbit hole of top paid female athletes in the calendar year of 2023. Iga number one, a freestyle skier by the name of Eileen Gu.
Ah, Gu.
Gu.
The traitor.
Oh, is she a traitor? Is she like, what do you mean?
Remember when we were handicapping like yes, the Beijing Olympics in 2022? She gave up her U.S. citizenship to become a Chinese citizen.
Benedict Arnold.
To compete under the Chinese flag. It was brutal. And then she went on and won three gold medals. Yeah.
She's number two. Coco's three. Raducanu is four. And Raducanu didn't win a damn thing, right? This is all off the court. Yeah. Naomi Osaka was number five. You're right. All off court. $15 million in endorsements. Six was Sabalenka. Seven was Jesse Pegula. Eight was Venus. Venus.
Wow.
Oh, man. Wow. Rybakina nine. And Leila Fernandez was 10. How about Leila? There you go. But yeah, like, so many of those are all off court stuff. Naomi Osaka, Venus, being the two that jump off the page there. So, and Emma Raducanu being the third. Okay, so let's do that. Let's do the word. So again, the bets you have Iga, but not when you made it was during the swing here at the end of the calendar year. So what right price did you get her at?
I want to say 220.
Yeah, I got three. I got a 3-1.
Barely better than you can currently bet. Yeah. Barely better.
Yeah. I got a straight 3-1. It got as low as like +180-ish, and then after the draw, it kind of ticked back up a little north of 2. So let's just do some word association with some players. I guess you covered Coco Gauff, but do you rank her fourth in your like behind the big three? That's four.
Yeah,
four for her. Okay.
Yeah. No, she like there's a gap after that.
After that, where do you put Jessie Pegula? What like we sort of
she's
just.
Fifth.
She's what? She's up. Fifth. She's fifth.
She's fifth, but she's the kind of player that up against the big three, not interested.
Yeah, her numbers are so good though, like it's incredible. All right. We talked briefly about Iga having to play Elena Svitolina. Did you get the impression with her like she can beat anybody on any day?
I guess. I don't know. I'm kind of ready for her to not be...
disappear.
I love... first couple years I was betting tennis, Svitolina was coming up, and she was just a great, great player to back, like out of slams. And then... just burned money in slams, and I was like, okay, well, I get it now. And the fact that she's turned it around to where she can, you know, be the spoiler at slams is amazing. I don't think she realistically has a chance to win, though.
Ostapenko, the hamburger that is Yelena Ostapenko.
Yeah, man. Oof. She's in that next tier, but I mean, I don't know. I think again, I guess if there were in general order, I think Iga's approach to off-season changes were focused at combating the power that is brought to the table by Rybakina, Sabalenka, and Ostapenko.
Ostapenko.
Like those are the three players she's consistently had the most trouble solving, and I think a lot of what her game has been adapted to for this tournament has been to combat that. So I'm not scared of Ostapenko at all, but she's obviously capable of doing damage.
Even the way you said that, I'm like, it's like part of you was like making yourself believe I'm not scared of her at all.
No, not at all.
Yeah. Vika Azarenka, anything there?
No. I don't think so.
Haddad Maia? Beatrice Haddad Maia?
Nope. Not interested.
Okay, Mira Andreeva, you just said this last time we're probably getting a good price on her, right?
I would say so, yeah. And it's not crazy to see her get to a quarterfinal here. This may be like kind of her kind of quasi breakout. Obviously, like if you see some of the match prices for her, like nobody is going to be caught by surprise.
Yeah.
Like she is very well supported.
Yes,
in the betting markets. She made round three last year at the French Open, round four at Wimbledon, only the second round of the U.S. Open. This is effectively her first go at it in the Australian Open. And of all the players that have yet to really succeed on tour, she is, what is she, career high ranking is currently, she's currently 47. Her career high is 46. Very, very realistic to expect she gets into the top eight this year.
Who's the best player she's beaten?
She's dispatched most of the middle class, probably Krejcikova, at Wimbledon, maybe.
Oh, did she beat Krejcikova? I had her last week and I won on her against, I had her again in the Samsonova match. And then she got beat right after that, right? Didn't she? No, she won the next round. What happened at Brisbane? She got beat though, right after that. Anyway. So, okay, Mira Andreeva, you were the first person to bring her up last year, I believe it was. Podcast we did when we talked about Andreeva and we talked about Sarah Bajelic.
I don't deserve really any credit for that because the market was like way, way, way. You know what it was? Her big breakout was Madrid last year. She went, as a wild card. She beat Leila Fernandez, Beatriz Haddad Maia, Magda Linette, all convincingly, and then lost to Sabalenka in the round of 16 at Madrid. And then backed that up by blasting through qualifying, and then winning two matches at Roland Garros. And then people were the market was way hot on her really, really quickly. Her wins at Roland Garros were impressive in quality of play, but against weak opponents, Alison Risk and Diane Perry, and then Coco Gauff. She went off as a favorite against Coco in round three.
Coco beat her, right? Coco
lost,
beat her.
Lost in three. Yeah, she lost 6-7, 6-1, 6-1. or, you know, 7-6, 1-6, 1-6, I guess.
I remember watching that match. Yeah, I don't think I was involved, but I remember watching. All right, real quick, last names. You can just, as short as you want to give them to me. Krijikova.
Not interested.
Arketa Vondrasova, not in top form here.
Not interested, yeah. Both of those are form and health questions, yeah.
You mentioned Magda Linette. Does she Magda Linette got far in this tournament last year, which is why I must have noted to bring her up. She got to the semis last year.
Super fluky.
Yeah, super fluky.
Yeah. No. If she had not cleared out Q3, I don't think Sabalenka would have gotten over semifinal demons.
And then I'm contractually obligated to bring up Emma Raducanu. Any thoughts on her?
Glad to have her back.
Yeah, okay. That's good enough.
tough draw for her. She's gonna have, I don't want to call her U.S. Open fluky. It was obviously a surprise, but I think she has a lot to prove in terms of being able to stay fit and healthy over, you know, over a fortnight.
You know who I want to be great, but like alternately I back her in a win, and then I will turn right around and back her in a loss, is Anna Kalinskaya. Yeah.
She got a nice draw. She could make a round four here pretty comfortably, I think.
Yeah, she's got good numbers, too. Okay, first round matchups on the ladies' side, and there are some great ones, man.
Yeah.
Your girl, Bielik, is taking on Lila. Lila's a big favorite in that one.
Don't think I'm going to get involved, but I saw that price.
Samsonova and Anisimova is interesting. Samsonova.
Yeah, I bet.
Over $2.
I bet on double A there.
Double A, did you? You took her on the money line.
Yeah.
Come on, Amanda. Get back to where you were.
Please.
It's amazing, though. Kenin won this tournament. I'm just looking at the lines on these. Kenin won this tournament 4 years ago. And Iga is -3333 on the money line over at Bookmaker. What about Angelique Kerber and Danielle freaking Collins, where Collins is a -250 favorite, and Angelique Kerber looked really good here in the short term.
Yeah, I think Kerber is a perfectly fine shot there. Danielle freaking Collins does not look right at all.
I do too. I think I will be betting on Kerber there.
Yeah, Kerber's a fine look there, yeah.
Buskova, Noskova, I guess you called your shot. You like Noskova?
Yeah. I like Noskova. That might be the best match around one, honestly. Garcia Osaka is the best match around one.
Right,
that one's number two.
You're right. I think that's number two. I'm just scaling down here. Tomjanovic, Petra Martic is interesting. Petra Martic is a -175 favorite.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think Tomjanovic, albeit, you know, higher pedigree at slams,
Vika Azarenka -250 against Camila Giorgi.
Yeah, it's a lot of respect for Giorgi. Not there.
A lot of respect for Giorgi. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
all right.
I have Azarenka closer to 300.
Oh, okay. I didn't expect that anyway. Let's see. I'm just scanning down these. Pliskova and Rybakina.
Great match.
Pliskova is +462.
Yeah, I think
that's +5.5. Still think
my numbers. Numbers say just shy of -600, +600 there.
Yeah. Volynets and Kalinskaya. That's really for the tennis hardos out there. That Kalinskaya -244. See, that scares me a little bit.
Nah, she can straight set her.
Okay. Let's see here. Bolter, UA Yuan, that's pretty tightly lined. Shelby Rogers and Raducanu. Raducanu's a big favorite. -345. Yeah. Okay.
Don't agree.
It's too high, right?
Too high. Yeah too high. High. Low conviction in Shelby Rogers, obviously.
Yeah.
But, that's the kind of match where if you put that in a parlay, you are sweating bullets.
Oh, yeah.
As she loses the first set.
That's right.
3-6.
Do not put that in your first round money line parlay. I'm glad to hear that you do that too, Drew, that you do money line parlays. Yeah. I love that. Like, the too cool for school. Like, if I mention that by Fezzik, he like gets so mad at me. I'm like, Steve, I do it all the time in tennis. Come on. Dude,
make the cut parlay at the Masters is like, it's fundamentally -EV. I know it. I don't care.
I don't care. It's phenomenal. Cause yes. You know what? I have won past my fair share of those in my tennis betting career. Yeah.
Of course.
Wozniacki and Lynette. Wozniacki's minus 152. That's interesting.
Yikes.
Yeah. That
is a very aggressive price for Wozniacki.
All right, you mentioned Osaka and Garcia. Osaka Garcia is, if not for the Seville Magdalena Fresh match, the most closely, and there's a couple others that are closely aligned, like Zidancic and Podoroska. But Naomi Osaka is by pennies a favorite over Carolyn Garcia right now. So that is about as coin flippy as it gets.
Yes.
Wow. You have a play on that? You're taking Naomi?
I lean Osaka.
Okay.
I think that's a match, though, that goes three. I think Osaka 2-1 as a correct score is a lot of fun. I think what's a fair price on, let me look at my fair on that. My fair for Osaka 2-1 is about plus 250, and you can get plus 340-ish out there at some spots right now, which looks like a good bet. Osaka, the over in that one looks very solid to me. I would be quite surprised if either of these women is quick work for either of these.
I already have that one in the bet slip, the over 22.5 on that
22
one.
And a half. Yeah. Oh, beautiful. Yeah. Cause like that realistically that could get home 7-6, 6-4. Like that would not surprise me at all. The over, in that match is a good one. And that one, again, you kind of have to watch, I think, cause that's going to tell you a lot about who's going to win Q3.
See, the problem with that one is I don't know. It's not scheduled yet. So I shouldn't say that. Don't know.
Yeah, we don't know when that one is yet.
Okay.
Not on the OOP yet.
No. Anything else that I didn't mention? I mean, Paula Badosa and Taylor Townsend. God.
Oh, God, that's a good one, too. Taylor Townsend for me in that one.
She's always live.
I love Paula Badosa, but yeah. I don't think Badosa's ready yet to be competing at a high level at slam tennis. So
she's in love, Drew. Townsend. She's in love.
Again?
She's in love.
With who?
Stefanos Tsitsipas.
I thought that was over. I thought Badosa-Pas was a crash and burn.
It is? Oh man, I don't know. Way behind.
I have no idea. I think Badosa's back on the market.
Come on.
She was she had like a BFF thing going with one of the other women's players, I thought.
Hold on.
Maybe they are back together. Maybe they are together. I'm all over the place here. I'll tell you what though. Taylor Townsend, I have some Taylor Townsend money line against Badosa.
Yeah, sorry. That's why I bring it up, because Taylor Townsend seems very live in that match. Let's see. Yeah, I think that's Sigmund has very good numbers, but I don't trust her against Alexandrova. What about your? By the way, we never talked about your girl Ons. How do you feel about her in this tournament?
Ons and I are not in a good place.
Drew, just to give background on this, Drew Dinsick, ladies and gentlemen, had Ons to win Wimbledon, not this past year, but the year before, at 33-1. And she got all the way to the finals, like she did this year, by the way, this past year. She got all the way to the finals, and Elena Rybakina just destroyed her and won her first line. I will say this. I'll never forget when Elena Rybakina won that, how nonplussed she seemed by the whole thing.
She was like,
cool, I won. I want a slam.
I guess I'll go get a sandwich now.
Yeah. Fish and chips anyway. But that was your big Ons disappointment. And then Ons, it does feel like you talk about, like Andre Rublev has this quarterfinal thing and Arina Sabalenka has this semifinal thing.
Yeah.
Ons has a finals thing, man. Like it ain't ever gonna happen, is it?
She won Madrid.
No, I'm just talking about slam.
She needs a, I wisely did not get involved in the Ons futures last year. So there was no heartbreak, but, it was heartbreak from a fan standpoint, but not from a financial standpoint. And I biggest win for me of the entire tennis calendar, more than Alcaraz, Wimbledon, more than, Djokovic, US Open or French Open was the Ons, semifinal against, Sabalenka. I was in deep pre-match. I got more in match at 6-1. I was up to my gills that Sabalenka was going to find a way. I thought she was going to find her way out of that, but really Ons just played out of her mind in that one. And then you saw the price for Ons in Wimbledon final and it was massive and you're like, uh-oh.
I was in Korea at the time.
All over again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was in Korea, so I was kind of out of it during Wimbledon, but I was following, of course, and I was betting it. And I was just like, I didn't see any of it though because of the hours, and I was just like, wow, what happened there?
I will say this,
Drew and I did a whole Wimbledon slam podcast. We never once mentioned Marketa Vondrousova, and your answer correctly was, why would we have? Why would we?
She had played two brass matches in her life or something insane like that. It's like ridiculous. There was zero reason to think she was going to break out.
So we'll characterize why you and Ons are not in a good place because of those result, because of that result, or just because of the way she's playing.
Her form for this tournament does not look great for me.
Okay. Me neither.
I think, honestly, I need to see her play some tennis, but I think she's going through some physical changes that may impact her, her game that could take until we get to the grass court part of the season for her to have worked things out.
Okay, all right, that's
basically
fair.
I think she's on Ozempic to lose weight, and I think that might impact her.
Oh, okay.
That's my read. We're just looking at her, but I don't know that to be true.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you want Ozempic analysis or Badosa Tsitsipas rumors, Drew is your guy. That's why we do this. All right, I'm glad to hear we're simpatico on a couple of the first round ladies. Like I like Taylor Townsend, and I do like the over in Osaka Garcia. Not quite as bullish on Osaka. I mean, you made a great case for Osaka, and I hope you're right because I think she's great for tennis. So I like, and Kerber to me is way strangely priced. So I really like those on the women's side, for sure. Okay. So Sinner is your big, Sinner is a big thing for you. And obviously we're both in the tank for Iga here. This should be so much fun, man. This is going to be great. Enjoy it. So and in football, just remind everybody who you have in football. So I know it's a tennis podcast, but people might be interested in what you have in football real quick.
I got every dog except Miami, and I like some unders this week, particularly in Detroit.
Okay, every dog except Miami. I got Pittsburgh plus the points. I got Miami plus the points, even though I didn't get the best of that. I got Philly laying the points, and then somehow I talked myself into Houston plus the points, plus three, but I don't know how I did that. Okay, Drew, good luck, man. Thank you so much for doing this. Love you for doing this. Shout out to Dan Weston again. We wish him a very speedy recovery. And we'll get you on the division round megapod for football.
Ooh,
and then
yes.
Looking forward to that. Maybe we'll get our buddy Adam Chernoff on with us as well. We'll do that this coming week.
Come on, what do you think fair price is going to be for Niners Packers? I'm just curious. And then the Bucks Rams, tough one.
Already advancing the Packers. Okay, all right. Thank you, Drew. Appreciate again Drew Stuff Whale_Capper on Twitter, Deep Dive Podcast, and of course the Best Bets Podcast from NBC Sports. And you're always doing live stuff. Remind everybody what you do live. You're always.
We'll be doing every primetime game. If you want us, hang out with me and Andy and chop it up at halftime of the primetime games, we'll try to find a winning bet, and if not, we'll at least be entertaining.
Such a great idea! Such a great idea! Good for you.
We're going on like year seven of doing this. I can't believe it's been this long, but it's crazy.
It's so great, man. It's awesome. All right, I'm sure we'll be in touch also during this tournament. Thank you, Drew. Drew Dinsick, everybody. Right. Good luck with your bets, football and tennis. Tennis especially, all weekend long. Enjoy. Thanks for listening.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.